The grave of Roberto in Honduras bears the wrong death date, a final indignity for someone society deemed disposable. Unlike media portrayals of predatory smugglers, Roberto was just a skinny Honduran kid guiding others through familiar terrain. His modest funeral represents countless others caught in the clandestine migration economy, desperate people with nicknames like Kingston, Flaco, and Alma, whose real identities often remain mysteries until etched on tombstones. Through 7 years of immersive fieldwork, anthropologist Jason De Leon gained unprecedented access to smugglers' lives, revealing a perspective rarely seen. While politicians debate border security in abstract terms, the reality is that America's border policies have created the very smuggling networks they claim to fight. This isn't just about bad people exploiting others. It's about a complex ecosystem born from desperation, inequality, and misguided enforcement strategies. In an upscale Tegucigalpa restaurant, I sit among Honduras's elite while outside lies a country ravaged by poverty and violence. I'm here to interview members of GOET, a Honduran police force created during the Obama administration to prevent migration. Despite wearing Honduran flags, these agents receive significant American support. Their mission? Intercept migrants without proper documentation. The agents candidly acknowledge the desperation driving their fellow citizens to flee. Many migrants have told me they would prefer to die in El Camino than stay home and wait to die from gang violence or hunger, one admits. Honduras, the original banana republic, suffers from decades of U.S. intervention and extreme inequality, with nearly half the population living on less than $5.50 per day. Traditionally, Mexican migrants used local coyotes from their communities who guided them to the U.S. for $3,500 to $7,500, with accountability through community ties. The landscape changed as Central Americans became the majority of border crossers. Their journeys are longer, costlier, and lack established networks. Many, especially from Honduras, flee gang violence with little planning. Mexico's Programa Frontera Sur ended traditional train routes, forcing migrants to rely on guías, often gang members or fellow migrants. Ironically, the same gangs causing Central Americans to flee now profit from their northward journey. At Pacalna in Chiapas, I met Chino by the train tracks who said, "Everyone says that we are all bad, but that's not true. It's just that no one ever listens to our stories." After the 2014 surge of unaccompanied Central American minors, Mexico implemented Programa Frontera Sur at U.S. urging. While presented as migrant protection, it mainly expanded Mexican immigration enforcement, extending U.S. deterrence policies while shifting human rights responsibilities to Mexico. The smuggling operation begins with Zero, a mid-level coordinator who directs, guides, and migrants through a treacherous 200-kilometer journey of jungle and highways. The route requires evading immigration checkpoints and bandits, with armed confrontations requiring verification from leadership. In Pacalna, migrants face Payaso, the clown, a menacing MS-13 enforcer, and Pato, who maintains the ledger. Payaso's extensive surveillance network, including children and elderly lookouts, ensures no one passes without payment. The journey demands 100 to 200 payments at 6 checkpoints to avoid violence, plus $3,000 for 3 border crossing attempts into Texas. The total cost reaches $7,000 with no success guarantee, while guides earn just $120 per week. Santos, unable to afford the $3,000 to $5,000 coyote fee, transports drugs across the Sonoran Desert to cover his crossing costs. He later defends a collapsed young Honduran migrant from a guide's death threats, refusing to abandon his countrymen. In their Villanueva home, Chino's sister Marina reveals his troubled start. Abandoned by his teenage mother at 6 months, he was raised by his grandmother alongside 6 other children in extreme poverty. Their home had dirt floors and no plumbing. Chino battled severe asthma throughout childhood. At 13, Chino's life changed when his brother Miguel, his father figure, died from electrocution while cutting a tree. At the wake, Chino turned to alcohol and drugs, declaring his belief in a powerful devil within him. A year later, he left for San Pedro Sula's outskirts, where his stepfather introduced him to armed robbery, far more profitable than his $5-a-day construction work. Kingston's childhood was equally harsh. At 8, he suffered severe abuse from his mother, who would hang him upside down and whip him with electrical cords. Orphaned at 12 by his mother's death, Kingston was forcibly recruited into the Honduran military at 13 during Reagan-era operations. His training as a marksman and in explosives left him permanently hypervigilant. Among the young men by the tracks is Jesmyn, a quiet 20-year-old in a pink Heartbreaker t-shirt. Her feline eyes mask a keen observer who values listening over talking, unlike the scarred men around her. At 5, Jesmyn learned her father Oscar had died, not her uncle as she'd thought. By 10, she discovered her parents were her grandparents and her sister was her aunt, arrangements born of poverty. Her teenage years were marked by terror when Smiley, a gang leader, stalked her for 2 years in his bulletproof vest and Nike Cortez shoes. After finding him at her window, Jesmyn told her mother and spent a year hiding. Following Smiley's death in prison, she fled toward Guatemala, hoping to reach the U.S. to support her family. Meanwhile, Alma poses as a migrant while secretly informing for MS-13, gathering intelligence about newcomers for the gang's extortion schemes. Locals often join this network for profit and protection. Kingston fled Honduras at 14 after his friend's murder, joining the Bloods in New York. After prison and deportation, an attempt on his life drove him to Mexico, where he became a migrant smuggler. Near San Pedro Sula, 16-year-old Santos, who survived Mexico's rail yards, bears spars from torture by the Zetas. He views smuggling with unease. If you don't pay the quota, they kill you. If you pay but don't get along with them, they may take your money and kill you anyway. Central American migration is driven by poverty, corruption, and disenfranchisement. While gangs initially attract youth with promises of money and power, the reality of extorting neighbors and terrorizing communities soon reveals their true nature. Chino and Jesmyn face harsh conditions on the train tracks. His hopes for their future end when Bin Laden and the Bread Man lure him away and stab him in the chest. Without funds for medical care, Chino dies on August 21 with Marina and Jesmyn present. Kingston, a Blood gang leader, reveals that smuggling relies on reputation, with payments structured in stages, $1,000 up front in Honduras, followed by incremental amounts. Guides earn $300 to $400 per person until Mexico City, where cartel-affiliated caminadores take over at the northern border. Before this final journey, Chino had fled hospital after a machete attack, unable to pay his bills, and headed north with his wounds. The border enforcement system, rather than protecting, creates conditions for violence and exploitation. The divide between wealth and poverty ensures this dangerous cycle continues, regardless of human cost.